Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
You are listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. The News for the Soul Radio Network airs daily, and our archives are always totally free. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
It's time now for Planning on Purpose with Stacy Walters. Stacy, an estate planning lawyer based in North Carolina, lives to help others. In 2008, her 5-month-old daughter, Shayla's heart stopped unexpectedly, causing brain damage that left her severely disabled. This served as a calling for Stacy that renewed her spirit of serving others by focusing her law practice on protecting and preparing families for unexpected life events and end-of-life issues. Let's take one step closer to peace of mind. Here's Stacy now.
Happy New Year! Wow. So excited to start a new year, and I trust that everybody had a wonderful holiday season. You know, it wasn't the typical holiday season for many of us. We weren't able to travel, couldn't see our family, wanted to try to keep everybody safe. And that's really all what estate planning is about, is keeping our family safe and helping them plan for the unexpected. We've been talking about, over the last couple of radio shows, something called a revocable living trust. But I want to do a refresher course, because today we're going to talk about what's in your wagon, and if it's empty, you're in trouble. Now, I had a little red wagon as a little girl growing up, you know, the ones that say radio flyer on the side, and that's what I want you to envision. You have this little red wagon, and it's going to be called a revocable living trust. Now, remember, there are lots and lots and lots of types of trust, but this one is a revocable living trust. Once that wagon is built, and that's what us lawyers do, is we build you a wagon, there's nothing in it. But you are the one that's in control of the wagon, and so you get to decide what goes into that wagon and when those things go into the wagon. When you take as many of your assets as you can, and you put those into your little red wagon, you still have full control. You can still do whatever it is that you want to do with those assets, just like it were in your own name still. Buy, sell, give away, add to it, cash it out, whatever you want to do. Nothing changes tax-wise either. Everything still follows your Social Security number. Everything that generates income is still attributed to you. And so the wonderful thing, though, about this wagon is if you become unexpectedly incapacitated, whoever is in charge of the wagon next, you've already named them, they just step up, manage your assets, make sure you're cared for, pay your bills, all that good stuff. They don't have to worry about, do you have a power of attorney? Now, when you're gone, these assets remain accessible and available. That means that your trustee, that's the person in charge of the wagon after you're gone, can immediately access those assets and pay your final expenses, take care of any bills. If you're married, the surviving spouse still has full access and control to all the assets. Remember, in contrast, if your assets remain in your name, after you've passed away, those assets are frozen. Even when we're married, even though we have assets that are joint, they do not automatically just go to the surviving spouse. And so when we look at a little red wagon, it's really an incredible organizational tool, a way to put everything in order so that if anything happens to you, your family can easily access those assets. And if you're gone, they can do exactly what it is that you want them to do with it. Now, remember, this little red wagon, again, it's a revocable living trust. can hold assets for any other individual that you don't want them to have full access and control to those assets. So grandchildren, for example. Now, a few years ago, I had a lawyer in Raleigh, North Carolina, give me a call. And he says, "Stacy, listen, I just need some affirmation. My client came to me and his dad died. His dad had a revocable living trust. He hadn't put anything into the trust, so his wagon's empty. But he did have a will, and the will says, take whatever it is that missed the trust and put it into the revocable living trust." He said, "So I went down to the clerk of court for the probate division. I got the will recorded, and I just wanted to start moving everything into the trust. Thought they would just give me the authority to be able to do that." And the clerk told me, "Nope, you can't do that. You've got to go through the full court probate process." And here in North Carolina, of course, it varies from state to state, but it's a lengthy process and it's pretty costly, time consuming for sure, and definitely always a stressor on families, which is normally why lawyers get involved. And so the lawyer said to me, "Is that right? Was the clerk right that I really have to take all of these assets that were in my client's dad's name and go through the court probate process? They won't just automatically flow into the revocable living trust?" And I said, "Yep, the probate clerk of court is right. They will not flow if they are in your name when you pass away and they're not in that revocable living trust. We've got a problem. Unless, and you all probably remember this, you have a beneficiary of some sort name." Now, you cannot, here in North Carolina, name beneficiaries to every single type of asset that most people have. So, for example, real estate, you cannot have those assets, so they automatically go to somebody that you've named. Same thing with vehicles, boats, trailers, RVs, motorhomes, things like airplanes. Those don't have beneficiaries. When we work with families and we have a will plan, of course, we help them to identify what assets they can transition outside of the court probate process. We give them a customized to-do list and explain to them how they get those assets passed outside of that court probate process. But everything else that cannot avoid that court probate process is going to go through the court probate process if it remains in your name when you're gone. Now, when we have a revocable living trust, so we've got our little red wagon, we still do have a will. It's called a pour over will, like I'm pouring out a cup of water. And that will serves one purpose, and that is to catch whatever it is and put it back into the trust. Remember, your wishes are spelled out in the trust, and that keeps your affairs private. Because you remember, trusts are never recorded with the court. But as this lawyer in Raleigh learned, just because you have a will doesn't mean that they automatically go into the trust. You still have to get through that court probate process. So it's really important to check your wagon. What do you have in your wagon? What should be in your wagon? And how do you get it in your wagon? So that's what we're going to focus on today. So what do you put in your wagon? Well, I never tell my clients what to do. And so you really can put anything you want in that wagon except IRAs, 401Ks, 403Bs, TO accounts, SIPs. There's another class on the federal side, any type of qualified retirement accounts. Those have to stay in your name as long as you're alive. And, of course, the reason is because at some point, the government forces you to start taking money out, and when they do, they want you to pay the income taxes because you haven't paid money or paid taxes on the money that you have put into these accounts or that an employer has put into these accounts. So they're called qualified accounts. And the only way that they pass when you're gone is through beneficiaries. However, if you do not have a beneficiary named or if the beneficiary has predeceased you, then that means it's going to end up in that court probate process anyway. So remember, You always want to name your trust as the last beneficiary. We call it the tertiary. And that way you can ensure that it's still going to avoid that court probate process. All right. So what do we put in that little red wagon? Again, anything that you want to except for those retirement accounts that are qualified. And we're going to walk through what do we recommend that you put into your revocable living trust. But let me stop first and back up for just a minute. When you think about that revocable living trust and you're putting your assets in there, you're doing something called funding it. So you're funding your trust. Now, for those of you who have trust, and let's go back into the early 90s or even the early 2000s, you may have a revocable living trust, but you might have one for your spouse and one for yourself. And often the lawyers didn't tell you to fund it. They didn't explain the process. And so if you pass away and it says, take my assets and put it into my trust, and your spouse is going to go through the court probate process, and then they have to take the assets and put them into that trust before they can get through the court probate process. Now, the problem with all that is what your spouse has to do during a time when they're needing to focus on their own grief is pretty time-consuming. They physically have to go to the court. There's all sorts of paperwork that has to be done. Once they get authority from the court, then what they're going to do, literally, is the exact same process that you do while you're alive to take the assets out of your name and put it into your trust. They're going to take the assets out of your name after you're gone and put them into the trust. So why not do those things while you're alive? Work together with your spouse and get everything lined up so it is simple and easy for your family. Let me tell you, it is the best gift. I call it the best love letter you could ever write to your family is to make things simple and easy for them if anything happens to you. So when you go to court with a will and you have a bank account and it's frozen, your executor goes down to the bank, they show the death certificate, they show the letter from the court, it's called a letter of administration that gives them legal authority, cash out the account, and then transfer it into what's called the estate account. So the executor has to open a new bank account. When you're alive, this process is very similar. As a matter of fact, my clients have often called this funding the trust process the probate before the probate, because they do know they have work to do, but it's a lot easier for them to do it while they're alive. So when we build that wagon for you, we've created your revocable living trust, you have signed it in person in front of a notary, which gives it validity. You meet the appropriate one of three requirements here in North Carolina to have a North Carolina trust, then you have full authority and control. But interestingly, if you go to the bank and you want to take your personal bank account, you want to put it into the name of your trust, so you're taking it out of your name and putting it in your little red wagon, the bank doesn't believe that you have a trust. You have to show them that you have a trust document that we create, the papers that we create for you. So you take the trust down to the bank, you show it to them along with your ID. They're going to review the trust, and they're going to make sure, number one, that the trust is valid, meaning it's properly executed, and number two, that you, in fact, are a trustee over the trust, because, you see, remember, only the trustees have control over the trust. Once you do that, then the bank is going to just do a bunch of paperwork. About a half hour typically takes is all. And you sit there while they just work on the paperwork, and then you sign the paperwork over as the trustee, transferring it out of your own personal account into your new account that is owned by you as the trustee of the trust. And that's it. everything still follows your Social Security number. 1099 at the end of the year will come to you reporting any income for you to file for your taxes. Now, the hard part about banks, checking, savings, money markets, CDs, is that banks all play by different rules. Here's what I mean. So a client of mine goes down to Wells Fargo and says, I'd like to have my bank account, my checking account, taken out of my name and put into the name of my trust. Sure, no problem, they said. Where's the trust? Here's the trust. Let's see your ID. Here's your ID. Everything looks good. They do the paperwork, and Wells Fargo actually lets them keep the same account number. You don't even have to have checks that say it's now in a trust. You can stay as private as you want to. The IRS doesn't care that you have this type of trust. Woohoo! That was super easy because our direct deposits still come in. If we have bill pay that goes out, it's all seamless. But sometimes either the banks change the rules, that actually happens pretty frequently, or the banks play by a different role, one that is not the same as Wells Fargo. I know recently another bank, BB&T, changed their rules. They used to operate just like Wells Fargo. However, they changed, and now they're requiring the person wanting to transfer their account into the name of the trust to open a new bank account, which means they have a new bank ID and account number, and they have to line back up their automatic deposits and their bill pays. And for some people, that's quite a challenge. They're dealing with Social Security. They have a former employer where they're receiving pensions, or they have a lot of automatic payments that go out, and they just don't want to deal with it that way. So on bank accounts, you can name beneficiaries for checking and savings, usually money markets. It's called POD, payable on death, POD, payable on death. Now, here's the upside of naming a POD, and you would name the trust, by the way, as your POD. The upside is it's still going to avoid probate. Usually one of the number one goals that people have with having a revocable living trust. However, there are two downsides. Number one, if you need somebody to write checks and pay your bills for you from that account, they can't do it because the account stays in your name while you're alive. So they are going to have to use the power of attorney, jump all the legal hoops through the bank, present themselves in person, prove who they are before they can write checks and be added as a POA, power of attorney, on the account. Number two is that because it does remain in your name, when you pass away, POA has no authority any longer when you take your last breath, and the account's frozen, which means people who need to access this for your end-of-life expenses, like funeral, for example, take care of any debts that you might have, they cannot access that account until the death certificates come in. Now, death certificates, they don't come to you overnight. In North Carolina, the funeral homes aren't the ones who are automatically generating those. It has to go through certain state-level administrative and on the medical side and all that good stuff. And so smaller counties doesn't seem to take quite as long, but we are seeing it take 6-8 weeks in some cases before the death certificates are available. So that's the two downsides if you do payable on death. So for your checking, savings, and money markets, they work exactly the same way as we just explained. It's going to be one way or the other. So either they're going to do it very easily, you keep your same account, or they're going to make you open a new account, and then you decide what works easier for you. Real estate is actually one that us lawyers typically do for our clients. It's something that we can do. You know, the banks won't let us come down there and change the name on the account into the trust. I think you'd probably be pretty mad if the bank did. They can be achieved and put into the trust by lawyers, but only if you sign off on a special power of attorney that gives us legal authority to act on your behalf and go to the bank. Sometimes we do that for people, but not too terribly often. Real estate, on the other hand, in North Carolina, transfers title by way of deed. And North Carolina does require that attorneys draft the deeds. So our clients can't just draft those themselves. So we draft the deeds in North Carolina. The client signs off on it. They make sure that the legal description is correct. And then we record it and then give the client the new deed back. With the deeds, once they're signed, sometimes we can file them electronically. Other times, if it's a smaller county in particular, they don't have electronic filing. We have to send in the deed to the county and wait for them to go through their process and mail it back to us before it transfers. Now, in the meantime, even if that trust is signed and you've signed the deed, the property is not in that trust until it is recorded. So that means that the Register of Deeds has done their business on their side and they have recorded it. Timeshares, they're exactly the same way if they are deeded. And it's really important, particularly if you have any out-of-state real estate, that you take those assets and transfer those into the name of the trust. Why? Well, because if you have real estate in other states, it's more than likely going to cause a probate process in that state too. So imagine you have a piece of property in Florida, you've got a condo in South Carolina, you have a townhouse for your daughter who's in college in California, and then you have your residence here in North Carolina. People are going to be running all over the place trying to handle probate matters, and every state, remember, plays by different rules when it comes to probate. So until the master probate here in North Carolina gets underway, then there's really nothing we can do with those assets. You couldn't even sell them or transfer them to the heirs until you get through that probate. So that's one of the other beautiful things about the trust is when you take and you put all of your real estate, deeded timeshares, even things like gas rights and mineral interests, into your revocable living trust, we're going to avoid those probate processes in all of those states. And then if, for example, you've got your daughter in California who is going to school and your wish is for her to have it, if something happens to you, then we just draft a new deed and transfer it to her. I wouldn't because I'm not licensed in California, but we would work with a California lawyer to achieve that very easily. It's not frozen and it doesn't go through that court probate process. CDs are a little bit quirky. You know, I know they're bank investments. But you commit the money for a certain period of time. So sometimes you go to the bank and you say, hi, I would like to change my CD so that my trust owns it. And the first thing that the banker says is, well, you're going to have to pay penalties. And most people back away. I always say, make sure to ask, well, how much are the penalties? If it's $10 or $20, go ahead and get it done. Because normally CDs are anywhere from 12 months to 36 months, and that's a long time to wait to load things in your wagon knowing that they could be open to going through that court probate process. However, if you're going to lose all the interest, which was the whole goal of having it in the CD, just because you are transferring the ownership, then yes, I would recommend waiting. However, do ask. Some banks do allow that payable on death for a CD, and if they do, then add the trust and make it payable on death straight to the trust. People often ask me, with the payable on death, what happens? Why wouldn't I just name my kids or my spouse? Cannot guarantee you that you're going to outlive your kids, or that you and your spouse aren't going to perish in a common accident. If one or more of those payable on death individuals are gone, again, every bank plays by different rules. And so I have no idea what's going to happen. It could be frozen and go to probate. The asset could then all go to one person instead of maybe down to grandchildren. Or it could freeze and that part of the asset goes through the court probate process. So you really want to make sure to work with a reputable estate planning attorney who's going to help you make sure that you understand and you're overcoming any of these potential obstacles in making sure that everything is streamlined, simple, and easy for your family. Now, business interests, let me tell you, business interests are one of the most overlooked assets when it comes to estate planning by individuals. They don't think about the repercussions. I was talking just a couple days ago to a potential client. He has several LLCs, which are limited liability companies. He also is involved in several partnerships. And when I explained to him what happens if anything happens to him, he couldn't believe it. He said, "Stacy, if something happens to me, are you saying my interest in my LLC, I'm 100% owner, it'd be frozen? Are you saying that my half interest, my 50% interest in the LLC with my partner, it's going to be frozen? The operating agreements, they won't just take over?" And the answer is, that's exactly what I'm saying. The operating agreement will not just take over. And he was shocked. Well, I don't understand why. Well, because the operating agreement doesn't have lawful authority to dispose of or transfer your interest that you personally own in the LLC. And the same is true with a corporation where you own stocks or shares in that corporation. We're not talking about an investment. We're talking about an ownership interest where you have a level of participation in profit, not dividends. And you also have a level of participation by voting within those business entities. Now, I know when he and I talked, he was pretty disturbed by this. But most people, and of course he wants to get it fixed. He doesn't want that to happen. But most people don't realize this. We have been walking through a probate matter over in Mecklenburg County. A lovely lady lost her soulmate of many, many, many years. And they had an LLC, and he was 50% owner, and she was 50% owner. They actually were planning on selling one of the assets, it was a piece of real estate, from the LLC. And when he passed away, she found out from the real estate attorney she couldn't sell it because she only had 50% authority in the LLC. So that asset, that one LLC, has been going through that court probate process for close to a year now. And, of course, she still hasn't been able to sell it, although she's got the authority now to sell it. But she lost the opportunity back at the time when he had passed away. So it's super important to make sure that your interests are in your revocable living trust. If anything happens, if you're incapacitated and they're in the middle of a sale, they can still move forward. If you're gone, your trustee will be able to transfer the interest either in accordance with the operating agreement or as directed according to your wishes. Now, one caveat here about business interest is with regards to subchapter S corporations. For those of you who have those, there is a I'm going to call it a special class of taxation. And because of the tax advantages of a sub S corporation, you don't want to do anything that would jeopardize it still being classified that way. So sometimes you might need a separate trust called a QSST trust. But definitely, if you put it into your revocable living trust, and this is true even with LLCs or other type of corporate entities, you want to make sure you're complying with the operating agreement. Your lawyer will review that, make sure that you, if you need written permission from any of your partners or other members or shareholders, that that's taken care of. And then that there is one more cover for that sub-S chapter, or subchapter S corporation, which is a provision that says in your revocable living trust, if you don't put it into a QSST trust, if the taxation is going to be jeopardized for that sub-S corp, you want to make sure that it's clear that wasn't the intention and that the trustee has the authority to then take out that interest in the S corporation into a QSST. So it preserved it. All right, we're not going to get too knee deep in that business stuff, but we're going to move on. So what else would we put into our revocable living trust? Savings bonds. I was a little girl. My grandmother gave me a savings bond every single birthday. And I used to think it was the coolest thing. I thought it was real money, of course, which it's not. But it always puzzled me. It said on there my name and or my mother's name. Well, the and or means if something happens to me, my mom can cash it out. If something happens to my mom, I can cash it out if I'm old enough. And so I've held on to the bonds because they've been continuing to mature and at quite a really good interest rate compared to a lot of investments these days. But the deal with the savings bonds are, what if something happens to me and my mom? Uh-oh. Well, then we're in trouble. So ideally, you do want to have your savings bonds reissued into the name of your trust. Now, our government has treasurydirect.gov, and the forms are right there online, and you would have to send in the original bonds if you don't already have them issued electronically, and they will reissue them, but they're going to come back electronically. I also have, clients who have HH bonds. They work a little bit differently. They will be reissued as well, but it's really important when you look at these bonds to make sure. It doesn't matter how much or how little. If you want anybody to have access to them without going through that probate process, you need to have those retitled into the name of the trust. The and or is not a sure thing. Investment accounts. I call them brokerage accounts. This is where you have after-tax dollars that you have invested somewhere. E-Trade, TD Ameritrade, Merrill Lynch, Schwab, Fidelity. All those entities are investment companies where you can put dollars and put them into things like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, precious minerals. You can even invest into real estate and something called REITs, like a healthcare REIT. When you have these accounts, sometimes they're an individual account where it's just your name on the account. Sometimes our spouses, they have joint accounts. And normally, the investment advisor sets it up so that if something happens to one spouse, it has what's called an ROS. That's right of survivorship. So if one spouse passes away, the account's still available. It's not frozen, and it goes to the surviving spouse once they present the death certificate. However, by keeping the investment account in your revocable living trust, it really does offer those two wonderful advantages we've been talking about along the way here. Number one is if you are incapacitated, then whoever is in charge of your little red wagon next, your trustee, they're going to be able to still access those assets, do things that are beneficial to you, pay for the nursing home, for example. Number two is that those accounts aren't frozen when you're gone, and the trustee can request funds to do things like pay for final expenses. Now, investment and brokerage accounts can have beneficiaries on them. They're not automatically put on there. It's called TOD, transfer on death. With transfer on death, it works a lot like POD. Now, payable on death, like we talked about a minute ago with our checking accounts and our bank accounts, means they're going to cash out the account and give the money to the person or to the trustee that's named on that account as payable on death to. Transfer on death isn't a cash out of the account. It means we're going to transfer the account, which means it keeps all of its stock and mutual funds and bonds and all that good stuff the way it is in the account, and then it gets transferred to that person. For a lot of people, that's really ideal. We like the idea that it transfers to us, number one, because we like keeping investments. We might change them across our lifetime. But number two is because when you pass away, assets in your trust do something called step up in basis, which means they, to the value that they're worth at your date of death, then if you do decide you want to sell or cash it out, there's the potential of zero capital gains. But with that TOD, yes, they have to wait for the death certificate, and yes, then each person named TOD has to go down and prove who they are, set up a new account, have it transferred over, unless they already have an existing account. And again, I do worry about confusion if something happens to your individual that is named transfer on death to, if they have predeceased you, if they're already incapacitated, or if they are in a nursing home, for example, already, or disabled to where you potentially could jeopardize their disability benefits or their support for long-term care, like through Medicaid. So ideally, you do want all of your investment accounts also to be retitled into the name of the trust. Now, all you have to do is contact your financial advisor. If you're your own financial advisor, they have the forms online, typically, not always. Or sometimes, you know, us lawyers do get involved and we'll fill out the paperwork for you if you don't know how to do it. And then we send it in and it's done. It's paperwork on the backside, just like with the banks. With individually held stocks and stock options, this one is a little different. So a state we were working on had Coca-Cola stock. And we were asked to get it transferred for the client. This stock, by the way, was in their dad's name still, even though he had a trust. And we need to get it into his trust. So his pour-over will kicks in and it says, take whatever it is and put it in the trust. Well, managed through, as a lot of things are, ComputerShare. And with ComputerShare, we weren't able to locate the stock designation contact. You're supposed to contact them directly. So we had some other hoops that we had to jump. We're still working on this. It's taken us a couple of months so far to get to this point. We haven't gotten anything back yet with regards to the stock. When it comes back, they're probably going to either reissue paper stock certificates, or it's going to come back with an electronic entry where they can track it. So, again, these are the same processes that your family goes through after you're gone if the assets are not in the trust, except they're tied to the court. They have to show every penny coming in, balancing with every single penny going out. Time-consuming, stressful, and cumbersome process for a lot of people. All right, we're heading down the home stretch here with our assets. Other things that you would want to put into your revocable living trust. We already talked about those IRAs and those 401ks, and they don't go in there, but I do recommend that you name your revocable living trust as the tertiary. That means the last beneficiary. We won't get into it today, but sometimes people don't want their IRAs or 401ks going straight to their kids. Maybe it's too much money at once, or maybe you do have a disabled individual, you want to support them, but we can't give it to them because it'll jeopardize their disability benefits. Maybe you have children who are spendthrifts or addicts and you need to make sure to protect that asset. So we'll talk about a different way because of tax reasons whenever we get to talking about IRA trust. But just know the safety net is using your trust anywhere you can as the last beneficiary. So if all else fails, major disaster happens, you and your family perish, the beneficiaries you've named are all gone, it's still going to avoid court probate. It'll come and hit the trust, and it'll divide out in accordance with your wishes in that trust. Life insurance policies are the same way. You contact your insurance agent who you have your life insurance through, or contact your employer. Times, though, we recommend, based on your goals, name the trust as the primary beneficiary. So, for example, if I have a married couple and they are in their elder years, I can anticipate that when one passes away, the other one might already be disabled. So if we name the trust as the primary beneficiary and that surviving spouse is incapacitated, then the trustee can just go get the life insurance proceeds and then proceed forward. If the person's incapacitated, though, that's named, then they have to utilize the power of attorney to be able to access it and jump a bunch of more legal hoops. Also, sometimes, particularly when we are dealing with either younger children or we want to ensure that the life insurance money is not commingled by our children with our in-laws, like our son-in-law or daughter-in-law, we will recommend that you send it to the trust. When it comes to your revocable trust, maybe your wishes are that your children's share of the assets goes into an inheritance trust. If you've named, though, on the life insurance your child, it's their money. They can do whatever it is they want to do with it, including putting it into the joint checking account. And once it's commingled, if they end up in a divorce, stand to lose it. If something happens to your child prematurely, it would all go to the surviving spouse. And a lot of people want to keep it in the bloodline. So we use inheritance trust to make sure those things happen. So we help make sure through this process to line up those beneficiaries. Now, life insurance policies do not go into a revocable living trust. There's no reason to transfer ownership into a revocable living trust. However, if you are in excess of the federal estate tax exemption, which now in 2021 has increased to $11.7 million per person, it might change ownership and go into something called an ILIT, Irrevocable Life Insurance Trust. If it has cash value, forget the federal estate tax exemption levels, but if it has cash value and we're trying to plan for long-term care and protect that asset so you don't have to spend it down in the event that you have to go to the nursing home, then we're going to recommend that you transfer that asset into the name of your asset protection trust to get it protected. Now, when we talk next time, we are going to start talking about planning to protect our assets. But I won't jump into that, but do know that there are occasions when life insurance policies do need to be transferred into a trust, but no reason to do that with a revocable living trust. Just name revocable living trust either as the primary beneficiary or as a tertiary. Annuities. You know, I'm amazed at how many people don't know what an annuity is. So let me just do a refresher real quick. So annuities are also purchased through a life insurance company. It's where an employer sometimes has turned over a lump sum of money, and there's a guaranteed payout, but when it comes out, you have to pay taxes on that money. It's called a qualified annuity. Sometimes people, though, take a lump sum. They've already paid the taxes on it, and they invest it in an annuity. They like the idea that there is a guaranteed payout after a period of years determined based on the growth from the stock market. The stock market can be pretty volatile, and some people are not comfortable with using that type of investment, and they would rather have it in an annuity. So when you have an annuity and a revocable living trust, you treat it just like your life insurance. It does not come into your revocable living trust, and you would have primary beneficiaries, contingent, and you'd use your revocable living trust as the tertiary, unless your goals are different and you want to limit access to it. And then in that case, you might send it to the revocable living trust as the primary beneficiary or contingent. Super important. I hope you're seeing not only how and why it is to get your assets into your little red wagon, But also how important it is to work with a knowledgeable estate planning attorney because of all of these nuances, which any one, if they get missed, can cause a snag in what you want to be your perfect, simple plan for your family. Vehicles. All right. You know, there is a long, ongoing debate. Every time I sit with people, they say, well, I was talking to my friend, and she said her lawyer told her, do not put the vehicles into the trust, because if you're in a car accident, then they can sue you and take the money from the trust. Well, today, if you don't even have a trust or your assets aren't in the trust, even if you do have a trust and you're in a car accident, guess what? They're going to sue you. And if you don't have enough insurance or if it's not covered, then they're going to access those assets through you. Forget the trust. So there's no greater increase in terms of liability, accessibility, and honestly, there's not an increase in vulnerability in the trust. It does not protect them from creditors. So if you run out and you run up a $60,000 credit card bill and all your assets are in the trust and you tell them you don't have the money, it doesn't matter because you can do whatever it is you want to do with the assets in the revocable living trust, which means you would be ordered by a court if you do not pay your bills to take those out and pay off your bills. So with vehicles, and I did insurance defense litigation the majority of my career when I first started practicing, those vehicles, there's absolutely no harm in having those in your revocable living trust. And here in North Carolina, it's absolutely beneficial. Here's why. When a husband and a wife own a vehicle jointly, one dies, the other one can't sell the vehicle. It's frozen. The law says it's 50-50. Can put on the title when you go and have that issued by the DMV, an ROS, right of survivorship. So when one spouse dies, it belongs solely to the other one. So it's not frozen. It doesn't go through probate. But most of the time, that doesn't happen at the DMV. The DMV doesn't ask you, and you don't know to do it. The dealer doesn't ask you when you're buying the car. And so it's amazing how many people we sit with that didn't realize that this was going to happen. But here's the real kicker. Let's say you do have an ROS on there. You've got right of survivorship, but then what happens if something happens to your spouse? One of you's gone, the other one passed away. Now your family does have to take this through the court probate process. If it's in your revocable living trust, they don't. It's not frozen. They can transfer the title to themselves, to the grandkids. They can sell it, give it away, donate it, do whatever it is that they need to do with it under your terms of your trust. Titled vehicle in there, cars, trucks, boats, trailers, RVs, motorcycles, mobile homes. A lot of people don't realize mobile homes are titled. Even if they're on a permanent foundation, they still have a title. Those things need to go in there. It's a process. You go down to the DMV. We have the two forms that are available that you would need to take to the DMV. Of course, you take your trust. Show them that you have a trust. They're going to make sure that you are the trustee. 9 times out of 10, the poor person at the DMV doesn't know what they're doing. It's from my client's experiences, one of the most difficult hurdles to jump initially just because of lack of knowledge on the DMV side. But we send you with the right forms, give you the instructions right off their website to take with you. And we do recommend that they go into the irrevocable trust. Now, for all real estate, for all titled vehicles, you have them in the revocable living trust. You really do want to make sure that there is insurance coverage. You've changed ownership. And so a lot of insurance companies, you can just add the trust as an additional insured to the policy. Some companies, though, that we're finding out in more recent years, they don't like trust, and they won't let you keep your same policy. And some of them make you open a business policy And when there's a business policy, it tends to be higher premiums, and people don't like that either. So before you transfer assets, you probably should call your insurance company and make sure that your eyes are wide open. You understand their processes. What are they willing to do? What won't they do? And is there going to be any change in your premiums before you make those decisions? The last asset that I want to visit with you that goes in are airplanes. Airplanes are of a different class. They're under, you know, federal aviation laws. We take care of the paperwork, send it in. You know, boats also, by the way, they aren't governed by the DMV, and that's through affidavit in a form that goes to the North Carolina wildlife in order to have that transferred. So those are relatively easy assets to be able to transfer into the trust. When you've loaned anybody money and you have a promissory note, or if you hold a mortgage on a piece of property, those assets also should go into the trust and be transferred into the trust. That's an asset that is often overlooked. They don't think of it as an asset. And so, for example, if your child is living in a condo that you paid cash for, but they're paying you rent as you use that money to put equity back into it and pay off the essentially the loan that you've given them so they can have a house, that note or mortgage needs to be transferred into the trust to make absolutely sure that if anything happens, the goals are being met and that your wishes are met and that the money is being recognized appropriately as an asset, however you want it to be recognized as an asset of the trust. Wow. So imagine you've got your little red wagon. It is full. It is filled up. What happens if you buy a new car or a new piece of property or you open a new investment account or a new bank account? What do I do then, Stacy? Well, you do it in the name of the trust. So when you buy another piece of property, it doesn't matter that they have mortgages on them. You ask to have it titled in the name of the revocable living trust. Any bank account, whenever you buy a vehicle, as long as you're paying cash for it, then you can have it titled at that point in the name of the revocable living trust. If you pay it off later, then you're going to have to go through the DMV and have the new title that was issued retitled into the name of the trust. So you do, though, want to make sure you keep, as life changes, keep those assets that are coming in titled in the name of the trust. Now, debts do not go into your little red wagon. Your mortgage stays in your name. Your credit cards stay in your name. Bills stay in your name. Only assets go into the revocable living trust. You can see now when your wagon's full, and I just see it all piled up with all of your assets, how easy it is for somebody, if you're incapacitated, to just grab the handle of the wagon and keep going in order to take care of you and make sure your affairs are handled. It's so much easier than using a power of attorney. We, you know, in more recent years in North Carolina, we have run across more time delays in the powers of attorney being approved through the legal departments at the bank or through the investment company. Or what have you, and it's because we had a change in the laws in 2018. So if it's under the old laws, they're taking a lot longer to scrutinize, make sure that it is a valid power of attorney. It does have to be recorded at the Register of Deeds if it's under the old laws, and that's not the case with the new laws. However, with any power of attorney, you have to present yourself in person, prove who you are, and then show them the original power of attorney before you're going to be given any type of authority. And it does have to run through their legal channels to give it a thumbs up because it's a tremendous amount of authority. So with it being all in your wagon, if anything happens to you, long-term, short-term, whoever is in control, they'll be able to manage and take care of those assets for you, for your benefit. Likewise, when somebody passes away, it just makes things so much easier. It's hard to believe I lost my dad almost a year ago now. Their assets were all in the trust. And there was an unexpected asset that came after my dad passed away. It was a refund check from a long-term care insurance company, and it was payable to him because it was his policy, and we couldn't cash it. We had to go through a short court probate process. And yes, his will kicked in, and yes, his will said take whatever it is that missed the trust and put it back in the trust. But that was so much easier than having to take all of his accounts, all the vehicles, the boats, the trailers, investments through the court probate process. Parents were willing to do it like this. And I can tell you, I've never sat with a family after they've lost their loved one and they have a revocable living trust, and that family has said, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing. I wish my parent or my loved one or my spouse or sister would have never put their assets in the revocable living trust. It's just a nightmare. I've never heard that, but let me tell you, I have sat pretty much with every single family, spouse, child, nephew that has had to walk through the court probate process because the perfect plan that person put in place was a will. And they go, oh my gosh, what a nightmare. For me, probate really isn't a nightmare standpoint. It's very emotional for families to go through at a time when they're grieving and they've lost a loved one. So when we sit with our families, we do treat you like family. We talk about goals. We get you to think about the things that nobody's probably ever talked to you about before. And we want to make sure that you know what you don't know, because that's really what it's all about, is educating so you can make the best decisions and have the perfect plan for you and your family. So, at Thomas Walters, this is all we do. All we focus on is estate planning, wills, trust, guardianships, and unfortunately this little probate aspect that comes along with this sometimes. I want to thank you all for letting me be your legal guide today. If you would like some more information, I've got a great special legal report that talks about probate and revocable living trust. Just give us a call at our office at 888-787-1913 or send us an email at legalteam@twestateplanning.law. Legalteam@twestateplanning.law. Fabulous weekend. Enjoy your Friday evening. And next time we meet, we are going to be talking about how do we protect our assets in the event of long-term care needs. Take care. Until next time, happy estate planning. Bye-bye.
News for the Soul Radio will begin its 24th year of broadcasting in January 2021. After nearly a quarter of a century of grassroots investigation and exploration into the unknown and lesser-known realms to discover what's really real and what's really possible, with News for the Soul founder journalist Nicole Marie Whitney at the helm, we now find ourselves here in this pivotal moment in human history. Staying in our power and in our hearts is more crucial than ever. We are continuing to work 24/7 at News for the Soul to uncover truths and techniques to best maneuver through challenging times. We are increasing our broadcasting hours to support and serve in the highest way possible. Tune in daily to discover hosts and radio shows, and also to hear Nicole Marie's latest cutting-edge interviews with luminaries of our times, speaking to what's happening in our world today from a conscious perspective. Community, consciousness, and positive empowered focus are crucial. We are here for you. Go to newsforthesoul.com to find out more. That's newsforthesoul.com, and spread the word so others can avail themselves to this free resource as well. That's newsforthesoul.com.